second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5, the game on this Thursday morning. Predators pregame coming up right after the show at 2 o'clock. Puck drop at 3 o'clock. Predators and Stars, the one tune-up before it counts on Sunday. So an exhibition game against the Stars. The league has been doing this Tuesday and then six games yesterday. There were three games on Tuesday, six games yesterday, and an exhibition schedule of three more games today, including the first one being Dallas and Nashville. And then the other two will be Columbus and Boston, and then the nightcap. It'll be the team the Predators play on Sunday in this qualifying round series. It'll be the Coyotes and the Vegas Golden Knights. So those are the final three exhibition games today, and all of them, the two games, the Arizona game, if you want to watch that tonight, it's at 9 o'clock our time. Maybe get a little preview of what the Predators are going to be, who they're going to be facing on Sunday. And in this five-game series, that game will be at 9 o'clock, and it'll be on NHL Network this evening. So you might want to take a peek at the Coyotes tonight before you go to bed. Pretty interesting stuff. We'll have Wes Durham at the bottom of the hour. By the way, you can stream us from anywhere in the world. Yeah, that's true. Very true. Anywhere. You can download the Game Nashville app, which is free and easy to do. You can enable Alexa Skill or Google Home. If you have that set up in your house or your office place, like I do, ask it to play 102.5 The Game, or you can live stream from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. The Titans and their general manager, John Robinson, has issued a statement saying that they had placed Vic Beasley on the reserve did not report list, but he has been in contact, John Robinson, with Vic Beasley. He is not here. He understands his absence is unexcused. And he told me, John Robinson, he will be reporting to camp in the near future. And John Robinson just goes on to say basically their focus is on the people who are there. The contract for Vic Beasley is a one-year deal. It's worth $9.5 million. It's got a base salary of $1.5 million, a signing bonus of $6 million, and a roster bonus of $2 million. So basically, when he signed it, it was a $9.5 million guaranteed contract. So what do you make, as we were kind of talking about it last hour, what do you make of all that?
I don't like it. I mean, it's obviously a very bad first impression for Vic Beasley with the Tennessee Titans. And, you know, people we've talked to since the signing, you know, our buddy Chris Domino in Atlanta, we've had Wes on, that they like the player and they've liked dealing with the player, but these are some things that have kind of come up, that there is that commitment to football and a question of his commitment to football. And so I think that's concerning, because now we're seeing it. Everybody else is here. You're not. And there's not a reason that we know about. Maybe you have a legitimate reason. I read that statement, I don't feel like that there's one in there, because he says it's unexcused. So to me, if it was a legitimate reason, the John Robinson would say, we know what's going on. We've excused him. We look forward to having him here. End of story. And it's done. But this leaves it open, and there are more questions now. So what's the reason? Why isn't he there? And John is pulling the, we're just worried about the players that are here. Whenever a coach or a GM says, we're worried about the players that are here, you know that there's something behind the scenes going on.
You mean that they got a little bit of red butt?
Oh, yeah.
About it?
I sense some ticked offness.
In other words, that's all I'm going to say about him. I'm just now going to focus on the people who are here who chose to show and report. That's what it sounds like. And that's fine. I mean, I get it. I understand. I'm sure they're asking the same questions, and the only piece that we don't know is, what did he tell them? What did he tell John Robinson? Why? I'm going to be there. I'm coming. I'm not opting out, but I'm just not coming right now. Like, why?
Right.
I'd like to know what's
the
reason.
Because there are fines, right? That's going to cost him money. Generally.
I just want to know. Whatever it costs, I mean, that's up to him. I mean, if it cost him money, it cost him money. That's on him. But I just want to know what the reason is. Like, I would like to know what he told John Robinson. And going back to basically your initial statement, it's very clear, reading between the lines on John Robinson's statement, is it wasn't acceptable.
Yeah.
At least that's what it feels like from that statement, because it's what I just said. That statement was, Okay, there you go. That's the Vic Beasley news. That's all I'm going to say about that and him. Now I'm just putting my focus on the guys that are here.
And what is one of the big things we know about John Robinson? He uses this phrase more than anything. Team first.
Team first.
Team first. This is not a team first.
Culture and team.
Yeah.
Culture and team.
And these are not team first actions that Vic Beasley has. And now you're going to have to help me because I really have just forgotten Kevin Dodd. But Dodd pretty much did this. He didn't show up on time, and that was kind of the beginning of the end. And he was cut by the end of camp, or I can't remember the exact timeline. But what I'm saying is they don't put up with this kind of thing. If he has told the general manager today or last night or whenever it was, whenever they spoke, if he has said, I plan to report soon, to me, soon better mean by the end of the week. And if he doesn't do it, then he's probably not on this team. That's how I think. Because John Robinson is, that's how he is. It's a no bones mentality of it is team first. These are the expectations. And if you don't adhere to those expectations, you're not a Tennessee Titan. And I don't disagree with that. Because like I said, I don't like this. This is not a good look. Everybody else is there. Why aren't you?
Well, I don't know one way or the other what their plan is behind the scenes. If this goes on for, while longer, if they're prepared to move on, I don't know all that.
Well, I don't either. I'm speculating, but you just kind of have to. I speculate based on what I know about John Robinson and his expectations.
Well, don't forget Mike Vrabel too. I mean, he's probably
sure.
He's not probably. He's kind of a no nonsense kind of guy too.
If I'm Vic Beasley,
so I'm
when
sure
I do show up.
I'm sure he's not in a good place either about this.
Oh, no. No, that meeting, there could be some paint peeling when they have that sit down.
There's also this story about the Ravens. Have you seen this? Have you seen Lamar Jackson?
I have not, actually.
He's trying to recruit Antonio Brown.
Huh. Interesting. But Antonio Brown's retired. He said he was retired. He's done. He's not going to play anymore.
And the Ravens have not ruled out. Now, the whole issue with Antonio Brown is what will be his, suspension. If somebody were to really show real interest and want to pursue him and move forward with him, what's his penalty from the league?
Yeah, what comes with him?
How much is he gonna miss this year? Because I think he's gonna miss games.
Sure.
If somebody is willing to sign him and they have to now then make a ruling on him, because he's just like right now just on the commissioner's bad boy list. It's just sitting on his desk, but he'll have to address it if he gets signed. What's that number? How long's he out?
Yeah. It would be interesting, though, because they
I would say he's getting at least four games, for sure.
Yeah, four to six, probably.
Yeah.
If I had to guess, that seems on par. But, the Ravens drafted Hollywood Brown, and so Hollywood Brown and A.B. are cousins. So there's that connection. I know Jackson worked out with him in the offseason. So, if he's working out, you got to figure, okay, he's still in game shape. Yes, he's saying he has come out and he has said at times that he's retired or whatever. It changes with the wind. But he obviously can play. It'd be a low-risk signing depending on what the suspension is. They're not going to pay him a lot of money.
No.
Nor should they.
No.
So,
right. No, nor should anybody. And so, if he doesn't get that, then I don't know what to tell. I don't know what Antonio Brown gets or doesn't get.
Yeah, I don't know, but it would be something to add him to an already talented team, a team that we have said, okay, they're probably one or two in the AFC. Depends on who you ask. And then you add him, if he can get back to the Antonio Brown of a couple years ago, without offense, that's just another weapon. And let's be honest, I mean, Kansas City, Damian Williams is not that, I mean, he's not that offense, but he was a piece. I mean, that's a loss for them. They lost the offensive lineman, I mean, because of opt-out. So they've taken some hits from that standpoint. You add AB on with Baltimore. Who knows what that does for them? But again, it's how, you know, are you going to be able to have him for 10 to 12 games? You know, what's the suspension going to be? Is that worth it to you? Because not only do you have that, you don't have preseason, so you can't play him in preseason. Training camp is different. So you, let's say you do bring him in the next couple weeks. Yes, he's in the building. He's getting acclimated. He can practice. But you also then lose him from 4 to 6 weeks. And then you have to try and work him back into your offense and see what he knows and how he can fit. So it's obviously different than it would be in years past.
Yep. All right, we'll come back. More on the other side. West Durham at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk a little bit about Vic Beasley with him and the plan for the ACC going into this fall and the college football season. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase, I don't know about you out on the west side, but here, in the last 30 minutes, it came down.
Yeah, it did that right at the start of the show.
Yeah, it was about, yeah, it was probably about, it was when we were talking to Brooks in Edmonton, Brooks Bratton, and it was just, whoo, coming down in buckets here. Still raining a little bit, but it looks like it's lighting up. It got dark, too. So it did the same thing?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Out on the west side?
Yeah, the bottom fell out, as they say.
I think we're supposed to get that throughout the day.
Yep.
Off and on.
Just a good day to stay in and watch hockey.
Gosh, it's like it was meant to be.
I know. I'm excited. It's going to be fun to see. I know you're excited to get back into the pre and the post mode. You're going to take a little breather at one to get set for that. But it's going to be a fun day. And then, hey, Sunday, the real deal.
Sunday, the real deal, and it'll all start at noon. It'll actually start at 10 a.m. on these airwaves. So lots of hockey on Sunday on 102.5 The Game. What starts at 10?
10 o'clock, Jared Stillman and I are going to do Preds Extra. For those of you that are familiar with how we do things during the playoffs, we have a lot of pregame to the pregame and postgame to the postgame. And so we'll be doing that starting at 10 o'clock on Sunday, and then again tonight and after post game on Sunday, we'll go to Facebook Live and have special coverage there as well.
The Dallas Cowboys have sent something out, which is interesting. We're going to have West Durham in about 10 minutes or so. What have they sent out?
So Darren Revelle has tweeted this out, that the Cowboys have canceled all season tickets for the 2020 season. Tickets will be sold on a single game basis, with season ticket holders getting priority. The Cowboys are also adding additional year to their personal seat licenses, or PSLs, as they're called. So basically what the Cowboys are doing is they are planning, like they're not going to be at full capacity, so they've just basically wiped out the season tickets. They can go game by game. Season ticket holders still can basically jump on their seats, but I find this interesting that this is what they're going to be doing there in Dallas to have a little more control, because as we know, I mean, we've been watching baseball for the past week, no fans in attendance, and many believe that the NFL is going to have a similar model, even though that it appears they're kind of leaving it up to the individual teams and what areas of the country they're in. But Dallas making this move today, just another sign of what the season's going to look like.
Yep. Panthers also releasing their kicker, Graham Gano, that being out there as well. Joe Kelly, after we got off the air, we talked about it yesterday on the show, the whole incident. I wanted to tune in last night to the Dodgers-Astros just to see if there were any more fireworks in that series. No love loss. Gosh. And by the way, even Earl Hershiser, who is on part of the Dodgers broadcast.
Yeah.
Man, they, and by the way, it's just throughout baseball. It's not just the Dodgers. I know they feel slighted more than anybody, but there's a lot of teams that feel the same way. A lot of players, a lot of front office people, a lot of managers that feel the same way. And as I said before yesterday on the show, you know, one, 8 games is really steep. I can't imagine that it's they're going to stay with 8. I think it's going to get reduced because I go back to what I said before. How can Rob Manfred in Major League Baseball, you know, try to throw the book at Joe Kelly when they are the ones that allowed this whole culture and this wasn't, by the way, it wasn't just the Astros. This just in.
Yeah, oh yeah, no.
Okay. There was, and Major League Baseball knew it. Major League Baseball knew what was going on, and they didn't do anything about it. They didn't try to squash it. They didn't try to get in the middle of this and get ahead of it and be proactive. They let all this go on. Now, the Astros are the ones that are going to be the poster child for all this cheating that was going on. They're the ones that have to pay the ultimate price. But this was going on in other clubhouses. This was going on with other teams. And Major League Baseball did what they traditionally always do in these type of situations. They sit on their hands. Or they look the other way and say, hey, if we don't talk about it, if we don't address it, it's not really happening. La, 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 can't hear you. La, 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 can't hear you. That's what they do. And so, wait a minute. You're going to get mad because people are mad at the Astros? Players are mad at the Astros? Players feel cheated by the Astros? And so now you're going to throw the book at Joe Kelly or the Dodgers?
Use a weak excuse to do it.
I mean, come on.
Did you see what they said?
Major League Baseball?
Yeah, oh, yeah. They said, well, he has a history of throwing at players. So that's what led us to 8 games.
He's got a history.
Hmm. Didn't have anything to do with, you know, what's been happening. He's got that history.
It's a Joe Kelly problem. It's not an Astros problem. It's a Joe Kelly problem.
It's weak.
That's weak.
Now, did he go a little too far with it? Sure. I mean, and I said it yesterday. Don't throw at a guy's head. I will not condone you throwing at a guy's head, but then sticking his tongue out. I have no problem being upset. I have no problem beaming a guy in the arm or the ribs or what have you. No problem with that. But 8 games. Come on. And to your point, baseball just being like, yeah, we're gonna take it to Joe Kelly and. After we basically
now we're gonna find now we're gonna stand up and do something. It's like Well, it's a little late, Rob Manfred. It's a little late, Major League Baseball, to act now. I don't know who moves slower, them or the NCAA. The problem is Major League Baseball has power. The NCAA doesn't.
Right.
They have no power.
Rob Manfred is just really coming across as just incredibly weak.
Yeah,
as a leader,
he does. He does not come off in good light.
And I wasn't a huge fan of Bud Selig, but you know, it at least, I mean, I don't know if he was much better, if I'm being honest, but he lasted a long time.
Well, that he did, but I don't know if that means you were good.
Yeah, he knew how to hang around.
Yeah. Well, remember, he was a former owner, so he was. What is the commissioner? Who's the commissioner work for?
The owners.
Yeah. Well, obviously, he had a great relationship with the owners. So, being a former, you know, being one of them. So, I don't know. I thought that was pretty weak. By the way, on the Marlins front, they now have had 17 players test positive. They are done. I think they're going to try to restart on Tuesday. So, that means the Marlins have missed over a week of baseball. So they're going to have to make that up somehow. Some things that are being proposed are maybe 7-inning doubleheader games, or at least the other option would be a 9-inning first game, 7-inning second game.
That's silly. Just do.
Personally, I just would rather just – I think it's just time to do 7-inning doubleheaders.
Yeah.
Everything's jacked up as it is anyway.
And you bring up the Marlins. I mean, the Phillies haven't played either, have they?
Nope.
So, I mean, that's a – you have two
But I think
teams.
They're about to. I think the Marlins, the difference is They have said they're not coming back till Tuesday.
Yeah, the Phillies are going to play a doubleheader on Saturday.
Yeah. I thought they were playing a doubleheader tomorrow and Saturday. No.
According to their website, Phillies return Saturday in Twinville versus the Blue Jays.
Okay. They'll have to make up some games too.
Yep.
We'll come back. A good conversation with Wes Durham on the other side. He is the voice of the Falcons. He also is the voice behind the ACC Game of the Week. We'll talk to Wes next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I don't know about pressure for today. Predators have an exhibition game against the Dallas Stars. It's their one tune-up. And then the pressure begins in the NHL this weekend. Five qualifying round games in the best-of-five series on Saturday, and the Predators will get the action started on Sunday in their series against the Arizona Coyotes. That will be the real pressure, and everything will be heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Today's pregame will begin right after today's show. I'll have that at 2 o'clock and at 3 o'clock puck drop heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Pete Weber and Hal Gill on the call against the Stars. Speaking of being on the call, he is the voice of the Falcons. He is Mr. ACC. Wes Durham is on the line with us. Wes, how you doing?
Good. What's happening?
What's happening in your neck of the woods?
We're going to play ball. I'm waiting on everybody else to tell me how they're going to line up in two other leagues and maybe the two conferences that were first in the pool, the Big Ten and Pac-12, want to put a list of opponents and scheduling out. We'll see what we can come up with here in September.
Were you surprised by the ACC news, or did you think this is where it was headed?
Was I surprised that they released the opponents yesterday? Yes. Was I surprised they set a date to start? No. I wasn't sure we were going to get all the intel that we got. We still haven't gotten it all because the TV folks, and it's important for fans to remember too, the TV folks have kind of got to, you know, agree to the grid, if you will. Typically that takes about 6 or 7 weeks in the wintertime to come up with. And, you know, they're going to have to expedite that process now. But I think it was great collaboration on behalf of everybody involved in the ACC, not just the presidents and chancellors who ultimately rubber stamped it, but the ADs and football coaches have done a marvelous job in collaboration, as far as we can tell, since really March when this all went down, to try and say, okay, this is how we're going to do it. And like the SEC, they put together a task force for COVID in the ACC as well, made up of people from every institution. And then the ACC were fortunate because they've got great medical schools on some of these campuses. In fact, the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center is at the forefront of the vaccine. But even Chapel Hill and, you know, places throughout the footprint, everybody really got together. Georgia Tech's in a biomedical situation with Emory here in the Atlanta area. So they were able to kind of get their arms around it. And if you'll notice, if you follow the opponent line, the ACC kind of made sure if you were within about 250 to 300 miles of one institution to the other, those schools are definitely going to play.
Yeah.
And then when they tried to, you know, when they talked about travel, I still don't think we know exactly how the travel ops are going to totally work yet. I'm not going to be terribly surprised if we see rosters pared down to about 70 players on the road. And, in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw about 70 players for home games, again, because the expansion of the bench area and you're trying to reduce people on sidelines and things like that, too.
Things we've talked about in the 4.5-plus months, which is a lot, especially when there wasn't any live sports, is what will come out of this and maybe stick moving forward once we come out of this.
Sure.
And we push all this behind us. Is Notre Dame playing an ACC schedule maybe one of those things that stick? Do you think this is a one-off, or do you think it has a chance to be the future?
Well, I think it's got a chance to be either. I think it's really going to be incumbent upon Notre Dame, to be honest. Darren, I think what's going to happen here is you're probably going to end up seeing Notre Dame's going to have to make a decision, okay? And it's not a business decision per se. It's a cultural decision because since 1887, they've been a football independent, right? And they've never been in a league. They don't know what a league looks like for football. But at the end of the day, Notre Dame has to decide, is the roughly $7 million they get from the ACC in football money and the roughly $15 million they get from NBC, is that enough in the 21st century to being a football independent, knowing that you're going to make more money this year than you'd make under the current arrangement you have right now? Is that enough to sway the decision? Now, I'm not dismissing Notre Dame fans. They're great. Their passion for their program, the respect of the history is all second to none, right? I mean, when you think about the Four Horsemen and all that jazz, right? But realistically, when Notre Dame says our independence is our culture, is that holding them back in the 21st century of college football? Is that holding them back in the new world of the CFP that we live in? Because we saw a couple of years ago when they were when they went in to the college football playoff. Remember what a controversial kind of admission to the CFP they were, right?
Sure.
And Notre Dame stands back and says, well, we have our opponents that we like to play. Okay, well, now they signed up for five, and in this case, they were going to play six ACC games. So realistically, if you go back a decade and look at their schedule, the common ground opponents that Notre Dame has had in that decade are the Naval Academy, who they have a historical tie with. They're not going to break, and I respect it because the United States Naval Academy essentially saved Notre Dame from shutting its doors during the war. Southern Cal and Stanford. Those are the three schools that Notre Dame traditionally plays. Well, and you and I both know that in an 8-game or 9-game conference schedule, you can still play those three schools. But in this calendar year, Notre Dame is going to have an opportunity to put their arms around, do we really want to be in a conference? Because they are still operating under the ACC, what I call the IPO, the stock term for initial public offering, that if they're going to join the league between now and 2036, under the current arrangement, they have to join the ACC. Academically, they are aligned perfectly, but the real question, the ball's in Notre Dame's court, to be honest with you, and I think that's a decision that Jack Swarbrick and the administration and the mammoth board of trustees of 275 members that Notre Dame has, they're the ones that have to make the ultimate decision. The ACC's done everything they can to make it comfortable for Notre Dame, within reason, I think, as we go to this fall.
So Virginia Tech has one of their big cornerbacks opt out. We're seeing opt outs all over in the NFL. Do you think what the slew of opt outs in college football is coming?
I don't know because I don't know who's in the ear of those kids.
Yeah.
Right? I think that really is what it boils down to. Caleb Farley's mom passed away a couple of years ago. The corner at Virginia Tech, who was going to be a first-round pick anyway, whether he played a snap or not. But there are a handful of guys in the ACC, and obviously Trevor Lawrence falls in that category, probably Travis Etienne, although the way running backs are handled now in the league, I'm not sure Travis is a first-round pick, although I think he's immensely talented, and he's got a chance to become the first three-time conference player of the year in Power 5 since Herschel Walker. To me, I think we're going to see some more. But, I don't know what kind of advisement those kids are under. I think if you got a chance to play, you probably need to put it on tape. But I think, that lost year in college is sometimes treated differently with football than basketball. We're going to see how this goes. But I'm not going to be surprised if somebody else does it or if we get, let's say, a half dozen guys do it.
What's your confidence meter at right now as we're about to head into a new month? We're about to head into August and we get a little bit closer. Is your confidence – I think we all feel confident it'll start. But where's your confidence meter on will it finish?
Well, I spent some of this quarantine going back and looking at 1918 and 1919 of the old Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference. And when you got a pandemic on your hands, you got time to do it. and also I also wanted to see just how really good Sewanee was too. And they were awesome, by the way. So was Washington and Lee, by the way. Here's what I would tell you. I think what we have to get our arms around, and I'm not a medical guy, okay? I mean, and Lord knows we all know that right now one of the things we're going through in this country is we got to understand who we can trust, right? I think what we have to understand is there's a really good chance that you're going to have some schools play different number of games this year. I just think we have to kind of understand that going in, right? Because the only 2 years that we can really go back and draw lines to that are comparable are 1918, 1919, and in the old SIAC, I mean, you had some schools play five and some schools play nine and some schools play eight or seven or whatever. And you know, they managed to get through a year. Hell, you had two schools didn't even play. Carolina and Duke didn't even play in that league in those 2 years, citing the war and the Spanish flu. So I think we got to be understandable of that. I think we also have to hope that young people that are involved in college football have a degree of discipline and maturity about them. That, and you saw what happened at Rutgers the other day, right? I mean, we just kind of have to hope that there's some cooler heads prevail and smart decisions are made. And I'm sorry you might miss out on the, you know, party at Big Tex or whatever the case may be. But, you know, in order to compete in football, that may have to be the case this year, at least through the fall. And I can't answer the fan question yet. I don't have I got golf buddies every weekend saying, am I going to be able to go watch Georgia play or Georgia Tech or Tennessee or Alabama or Auburn? I don't know. I don't have a feel yet for how that process is going to work, because I think at the end of the day, some of it's going to be controlled by state health officials, and some of it's going to simply be controlled by the campuses themselves and what they're comfortable with welcoming fans to a facility on a football Saturday.
Wes Durham is with us. And Wes, as we have the conversation about, okay, what are some things that maybe can stick around? And you brought up Notre Dame and the ACC, and it feels like to me that this is shifting more and more to the Power Five doing their own thing, and then what does that mean for everybody else? And a prime example of that is in the ACC, you know, Duke was scheduled to play Middle Tennessee State this year. That's obviously a big hit for MTSU from a financial sense. So what do you think the snowball effect is going to be if moving forward you're having more conference games and you're having less of these, you know, mismatches, or however you want to put it, that are happening between the Group of Five and the Power Five?
Well, I think, Chase, here's where we're going to have to go to. And Chris Massaro would have to be the guy to answer this question for you. He would have to tell you what he knows, because Chris got great experience at all levels, right? I mean, he was at South Carolina, I know, for a while, and worked at some other places. What are the differences in the resources at Middle Tennessee State right now and the differences in the resources at, say, Tennessee? And in particular, what are those resources as it relates to testing? Because that becomes, I think, the differential right now. In the future, look, we all, you know, and you guys do this for a living, so we all knew that the fine line of major college athletics and G5 athletics, Power 5 and G5, were all different, right? We knew that there was a border there, right? I think we're now seeing how significant that border is, if that makes sense. The other aspect of this is the president of the NCAA has proven now on two occasions in the last collective week that he does not know what's going on. I mean, Dr. Emmer, God bless him, yesterday tried to tell Heather Dinich that the FCS tournament is 24 teams in a round robin. That's not even what they do.
Oh, boy.
You know, the NCAA has got to understand, and they need to quit talking. You know, move out of the way. Let the Power Five, who handle major college football, handle major college football. Because make no mistake, the NCAA has not done one thing to put major college football in a position to play this year. They've added commentary, very idle commentary, I might add, along the way. But they have nothing to do with it. Now, if their board of governors elects next week to postpone the fall championships of all sports in Division I, including FCS football, that will leave the FBS to play a season. Then it will be up to the Sun Belt, Conference USA, these other G5 leagues, if you will, to determine how they want to go about their season. And I think, in all honesty, that's what they're waiting for. And I understand why. They had to make sure that their games, like you're talking about MTSU Duke, they had to make sure those games weren't going to happen. Well, those games were not going to happen. And that's a long answer to your question, but I think the pandemic can cause a lot of things. And we're talking about Notre Dame and all the potential and, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe more conference games in the future. One of the things that the pandemic has certainly shown the general fan of college athletics is the difference between Power Five and Group of Five is significant right now.
Yeah, and another thing that I think it's shown, at least in my opinion, is there needs to be a larger voice for college football overall, whether it's you know, the Power Five combine and one of these conference commissioners become the czar, or they have more of a committee or what have you. But because of what you just said about the NCAA and basically not knowing what's going on, I think that it's even more apparent that they need some sort of college football commissioner or some or better leadership at the top.
Well, Mike Krzyzewski said last week to Mark Packer in a clip we ran on our Packer and Durham show that he had with Mark on SiriusXM in the afternoon on 84. He said that he thinks Dan Gavitt should be the commissioner of college basketball for the NCAA. And Mark Emmert said to Heather Dennett, he doesn't think there needs to be a commissioner for football. But yet he can't tell me how the SCS tournament's played either.
Exactly. And that's part of the problem.
I mean, we could go an hour and a half. I mean, we could come back and take calls and, you know, just go all day on this topic, because we are a decade late on this process, guys. I mean, when we went to the CFP, we should have had somebody.
Yep.
We should have had somebody at the back end of the BCS in the early years of the CFP become the de facto commissioner or whatever of college football, especially in Power Five. And you guys have, I'm sure, Commissioner Sankey on from time to time and things like that. People like Greg Sankey, John Swofford, Bob Bowlesby, Kevin Warren now at the Big Ten, certainly Larry Scott, although the Pac-12 has its own set of issues that are exclusive to them. I think we all understand now that the big boy football and even the other leagues, Sunbelt, Conference USA, that kind of thing, MAC, they're going to have some direction and leadership here, because we're going to be in some economic recovery in college athletics in the next couple of years as a result of what we're going through this year.
Yeah, and that's the tough part, because Darren has pointed this out. We've all talked about it, but, I mean, there are going to be some programs that go away, some other sports that go away because of college football not being able to bring in the money that it usually does.
No question. I think you only need to look at the University of Connecticut, whose football team is abysmal, and yet they cut other sports because their president and their trustees director said, we need football's revenue to funnel the rest of the sports. Well, the sports they cut were successful sports, but they kept one that was abysmal because of the financials involved.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to play good football to make money. That ought to be a revelation to a lot of people.
Yep, that's exactly right. You don't even have to be good.
Hell, you can go 2-10 and – hell, Darren and I could go out there and coach him and go 2-10 or 1-11 and still take checks.
Hey, Darren's got some baseball coaching experience now. I think he could transition. Well, he'd be good.
Yeah.
Wes, real quick, what's going on? Give us a little bit about Vic Beasley. Like, I'm sure you've seen the Titans have released a statement.
I saw it, and I knew you were going to ask me that, and I have no idea.
You got nothing?
I thought
he's not hanging out at your house, or you haven't seen him. You haven't played golf
with
him.
He is a Bartow County native. He is from metropolitan Adairsville, Georgia, which is driver 3 wood from Cartersville, where I live. But I can tell you I have no idea. Did he not report yesterday?
Nope. Okay, the Titans released a statement today. John Robinson said, I've been in contact with him. He knows this is unexcused, but he said – he will report at some point, and that's really basically it. No reason why he's not here, nothing.
Well, I told you I like the kid. I've always enjoyed being around him. He's a polite and humble kid. He's a different guy now.
Yeah.
But, you know, last year when the Falcons picked up his option, I think I told you this story. You know, he was – Dan Quinn said, I'm looking forward to him being, you know, the OTAs and all those type things to work out with our team. And he didn't show up. Remember that?
Yep.
And Dan Quinn was not happy at all about it. And I thought, well, you know, they released him. I wasn't surprised. And, you know, going to Nashville, I thought, well, that's close enough to home, relatively speaking. You know, maybe it'll turn around. And I was surprised, but not surprised at the news the other day. And, you know, again, I liked him. I like him as a young man very much. But I think that he's got to find out if football is important to him. That would be my short answer to what may be a long answer at some point.
Yeah. Wes, good stuff as always, man. It's always good to catch up with you. Hope you and the family are staying safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Take care. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Wes Durham. He is the voice of the Falcons, ACC. You just heard Packer. He's on the College Sports Channel on SiriusXM. And so Packer and Durham, and so they do a fantastic job. Wes is fantastic, and there you go. And he has told us that we've asked him about Vic Beasley in his visits with us, and he has said you're going to love him. He's great to deal with, super nice guy. But as you just heard, he's different, and this sounds like this is stuff that he was doing in Atlanta that drove the Falcons crazy, and it doesn't look like any of that has changed now that he's supposed to be in Nashville and with the Tennessee Titans. I don't know what you took from it, but I think this is one of those deals where you get what you signed up for, right? They may have known this, but hoped that that wouldn't play out that way, especially since he got just a one-year deal. Maybe he would come in hungry, maybe just have a different approach. And, you know, there's just a lot of, you know, as we know, there's a lot of guys, there's a lot of coaches, there's a lot of athletes. They're just not going to change. They are who they are, right? And it doesn't, no matter where, when you think it's a wake-up call or this is the time they're going to change because of the circumstances, because of the contract or what have you, because of a tag, they're labeled a certain way. Some do, and some don't. And I'm not saying that he's not, but this sounds exactly like the blueprint that the Falcons probably are sitting there going, yeah, okay, we're not surprised. Really? Right. He's not there. No kidding. Oh, would have never guessed that.
What a pity.
Yeah. Right? Well, we've been there, done that. We've been down that road before. I don't know. It's, you know, they always say first impressions. It's not a good first impression, that's for sure.
No, not at all. And I think that the like we were saying earlier about John Robinson and Mike Vrabel, you know, how they deal with things and the type of players and people that they want in that organization, right now Vic Beasley is not fitting that mold. And you know, eventually they're just going to, you know, you have to cut bait and move on. If he doesn't show up in the next few days, he's not going to be on this team. That's the bottom line. And they'll void the contract or whatever they have to do to go through that, and they'll just move on. But then that leaves a big void, and it then puts the ball in Jadeveon Clowney's court, because it's going to make it – he's the Titans will go to him, and he'll go, well – here's my price. That's what it's going to take. So it's a mess.
We talked about the Phillies earlier this hour, and I don't know if you've seen this, Jeff Passan putting out there on Twitter that the Phillies have canceled workouts today. Remember, I said yesterday they had the clubhouse attendant test positive, who was over on the right on the other side, right?
Yep.
Dealing with the visiting team, and a coach test positive. All activities have been shut down until further notice. And Jeff Passan saying that five-inning triple headers may be coming for the Marlins and the Phillies. No, I'm kidding.
I was about to say, what? That's a thing? No. No. I mean, that could work for your 8U team.
Yeah. Well, we only play six is the most, unless you go extra innings. We did go extra innings last weekend, which was the first. And you start with a runner at second.
Yeah. Well, if they go extra innings in a five-inning triple header, what, are they going to put a runner at third? Like, how's that going to work?
So, in fact, didn't the Dodgers-Astros, they went 13 innings last night.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Mookie Betts come up with a big hit in extras.
Big money Mookie. Is that what we're going to call him now?
Hopefully he's going to get going, because I know he has come out of the gates a little slow, but maybe that was the start
lot,
of him
though.
Getting going.
I've seen a lot of players that, you know, of his ilk that have come out a little bit slow, which I guess is not super surprising, but again, you have 60 games. You don't have April. You know, usually
right.
You can come out a little slow in April and be fine. You don't have April. So you kind of got to get after it.
Well, you're going to be very excited, because to start the third hour, we're going to talk about your Bravos with Brian Jordan.
We are.
So that should be a fun way to start off the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase. Brian Jordan in the On Deck Circle right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.